Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Friday, June 13th. I'm Jordan Pangelinan, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, no King's Day protest happening tomorrow at the Mattaquette Plaza in Eureka. Humboldt applauds new mental health project, but timeline raises doubts. And humpback entangled in Dungeness crab gear near Eureka. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. The Humboldt County Sheriff's Office provides the following update regarding the officer-involved shooting that occurred on June 5, 2025, near the Bear River Family Entertainment Center in Loletta. The deputy involved in the incident has been identified as Corporal Bradford Anderson, a 9-year veteran of the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office. Corporal Anderson is currently on paid administrative leave per standard protocol. On June 5, 2025, Nicholas Anderson succumbed to injuries sustained during the incident. A forensic autopsy confirmed the immediate cause of death as a gunshot wound to the chest. Toxicology results are pending. The investigation remains active and is being conducted by the Humboldt County Critical Incident Response Team. Additional details will be released in compliance with California state law as the investigation progresses. Anyone with information about this case is encouraged to call the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office at 707-445-7251 or the Sheriff's Office Crime Tip Line at 707-268-2539. Fortuna veterans from the Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 2207 and American Legion Post 2057 will hold a flag retirement ceremony on Saturday, June 14th, which is officially Flag Day. Old and tattered flags which have been collected by the veterans from American Legion Post 2057 and Veterans of Foreign Wars Post 2207 will be destroyed beginning at 10 a.m. at the Fortuna Volunteer Fire Department on South Fortuna Boulevard. That morning, Fortuna residents may see a column of smoke rising from the main Fortuna Fire Station grounds as worn, tattered, and damaged flags are ceremonially retired. Firefighters from Fortuna Volunteer Fire Department Support Company will assist with the event to ensure that the flames from the flag retirement ceremony stay under control. In ordinance with the U.S. government regulations, the flag, when it is in such condition that is no longer a fitting emblem for display, should be destroyed in a dignified way, preferably by burning. Flags which are in such a condition that they should no longer be displayed can be brought to the Fortuna Veterans Memorial Building and disposed in the red, white, and blue container at the front of the building. Those in opposition of President Donald Trump's administration are set to rally in hundreds of cities on Saturday, during which the military parade in Washington to mark the Army's 250th anniversary, which also happens to be Trump's birthday. The name and theme of No Kings was organized by the 5051 movement, a national movement of Americans who stand for democracy and against what they call the authoritarian actions of the Trump administration. 5051 stands for 50 states, 50 protests, one movement. Organizers intend for the protest to counter the Army's 250th anniversary celebration, in which Trump incorporates hundreds of military vehicles and aircraft and thousands of soldiers. Nearly 2,000 locations are scheduled for tomorrow's protest. There will be one held in Eureka at the Mattaquette Square Plaza from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. KMUD News reached out to the Eureka Police Department in their plans when attending the protest tomorrow. Laura Montoya, the Public Information Officer for EPD, responded with this in a statement.
We are aware of a No Kings protest on Saturday, June 14th, and Eureka Police Department will be there. We're not doing anything but showing up to make sure everyone is safe. Thank you.
More information about No Kings Day can be found on nokings.org, and KMUD will continue to report on this when more information is available. A new mental health facility is in the works for Humboldt County, but there's doubts about whether its cost will stay within the budget, Daniel Mintz reports.
Humboldt County has gotten what one member of the Board of Supervisors describes as an amazing award to build a new mental health facility, but there are concerns about whether cost overruns that scuttled a jail expansion project could happen again. At its June 10th meeting, the Board of Supervisors was presented with the plan for replacing the county's Semper Virens psychiatric facility. Semper Virens is located at the Clark Complex on H and Wood Streets in Eureka. Thanks to a $43.5 million State Proposition 1 grant, the county plans on building a 16-bed facility to replace Semper Virens, with the new one slated for what is now a parking lot on 5th Street between I and J Streets. Staff told supervisors construction of the new facility is expected to be done in 2030, and Supervisor Rex Bone recommended doing it more quickly. His doubts about the timeline stem from what happened last year when a jail improvement project was abandoned when cost increases went too far beyond the amount of a state grant.
I would suggest spending more money to have them do it on a shorter basis so we obviously start serving the people we need to serve. But otherwise, this goes by the way of the jail. In 4 years, we have a 30% increase in costs, and it becomes unattainable, according to looking at our budgets, over the next 3 years. So I think pushing the envelope now and do it a little more, I mean, a year to design, it's for 16 beds. It just seems like we have a lot of opportunity to take a lot of hiccups in the next 4 years, because I don't see anything going down in the next 4 years. I don't see any, and I worry about those things, and I don't know if we have the escalation clauses in there or anything else. I know there's no clauses in to cover raises, and this is exactly what happened. I appreciate that we sent in a complete packet, but if you remember right, that's what happened with the jail.
Supervisor Steve Madrone said the best way to avoid cost overruns is to improve county facilities management. Semper Virens opened in 1970, and Health and Human Services Director Connie Beck said the building has needed, quote, constant repairs ever since, and there haven't been any significant improvements to it in the last 45 years. Public Works Director Tom Mattson acknowledged there's risk, but he said it's worth taking.
Sometimes you have to take risks to get great rewards. Make no mistake, this is a critical medical care facility. Most people think about critical medical as, you know, the hospitals, the regular doctors. Mental health is also very, very critical in our community. I want to thank all of the staff that worked on this. It's not like they didn't have a full-time job when this came to everybody. Everybody cleared their desks, multiple different departments to work together. And yes, there's always a risk. We believe we've built a solid budget that will survive what's coming at us, but there's always a risk. And I'm just thankful to be part of this and our staff to be part of this, because this is a critical care medical facility for the whole county.
There are what was described as unknowns beyond those related to construction. In her earlier presentation, Beck said operation of the new facility is yet to be decided.
We're not sure how the facility will be run. We'll have more discussions around that. We make contract with another entity, or possibly continue to run as the county. I know that your board is aware that we have several contracts with doctors and nurses in order to provide the services of Semper Virens. So that will be a work in progress over the next couple of years. We will be working with our community partners and stakeholders on feedback opportunities that align with the grant guidelines.
The new facility won't have outpatient services, but it will have what Beck described as 4 crisis stabilization units for stays less than 24 hours. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
The director of the California Department of Fish and Wildlife conducted an assessment today, June 13th, and has announced an early closure of the commercial Dungeness crab season in fishing zones 1 and 2, stretching from Point Arena to the Oregon border. The closure will take effect on June 20th at 6 p.m. This decision follows the confirmed entanglement of a juvenile humpback whale in two separate sets of Dungeness crab fishing gear. The whale was spotted off the coast near Eureka. The Center for Biological Diversity, a nonprofit that has previously sued the National Marine Fisheries Service over whale entanglements, is now responding to the incident.
Right now, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife is at a critical decision-making point as it relates to the operation of the California commercial and recreational Dungeness crab fisheries. So the department is currently assessing entanglement risk and preparing a management recommendation for both of those fisheries. And right now, the preliminary recommendation is to close the two northernmost commercial fishing zones, so zones 1 and 2, which are north of the Sonoma-Mendocino County border, and that would take effect on June 20th. And this would mark the official end of the commercial crabbing season, since zones 3 through 6 have been closed since April 15th and May 1st. And this assessment is actually happening just days after the department confirmed that a juvenile humpback whale was entangled in two sets of California commercial Dungeness crab gear near Eureka, California. So the department really has to make a decision that's going to protect both whales and sea turtles from any future entanglement risk or future entanglements from happening.
That was Ben Grundy, Oceans Campaigner with the Center for Biological Diversity. Humpback whales are protected under both federal and international law, but their status under the Endangered Species Act depends on the population. If the whale spotted near Eureka belongs to the Central America or Mexico distinct population segments, it would be classified as endangered or threatened, respectively. Each summer, humpback whales migrate north from their breeding grounds in Mexico, and during that journey, they faced increased risk of entanglement in fishing gear. Grundy says the recent incident is just the latest in a pattern that continues to raise alarms.
One of the difficult things about this latest entanglement is the fact that it absolutely could have been prevented. We've been calling on the department to close the fishery to vertical lines because we know that through the science and historic observations of whale migratory behavior and feeding patterns, that during these late spring, early summer months, there's just high concentrations of whales in the fishing grounds that Dungeness crab fishers are operating in. So we see that there often is a spike in the concentration of the whales in these fishing zones, and this can often lead to increased risk of entanglement. And given the large number of entanglements that the state had last year, we believe that the department should have exercised more caution and been quicker to close all the fishing zones to vertical lines. And if people do want to be on the water when there is elevated risk of entanglement, then the solution is pop-up fishing gear. Pop-up fishing gear is an avenue to allow people to stay on the water and continue fishing while also removing the risk of entanglement in persistent vertical lines. So unlike conventional fishing gear where you have a large pot that's on the seafloor and it's connected to a buoy on the surface with a long rope, pop-up fishing gear contains all of the rope in the buoy within the trap system itself on the seafloor. And one model it uses an acoustic release system, which allows a fisher to essentially send a signal from their boat to their gear, releasing the buoy. So it minimizes the amount of time that a vertical line is actually in the water, making it safer for whales and other marine life that might be swimming through those waters. So we are definitely asking the department to support the continued development of this gear, and there's been some exciting developments through the experimental fishing permit program, and we have a lot of people on the water right now testing the gear and have seen a lot of success, so we're asking the department to authorize this gear for use and continue to support the access to this gear.
This season already included a 25% trap reduction in Northern California's fishing zones 1 and 2. Part of a broader set of regulations, including delayed season openings, aimed at reducing entanglement risk to humpback whales. In 2024, four-wheel entanglements were confirmed to be linked to the California crab fishery. The Center for Biological Diversity is calling for changes to the gear used by the local fleet. But in our previous reporting, Harrison Ebeck of the Humboldt Fishermen's Marketing Association argued that most entanglements are never definitively traced, meaning the gear could be from another fisheries, states, or even countries. That makes it difficult to pin the blame on California's fleet, but the center maintains that stronger preventative measures are still needed.
Protecting whales and sea turtles is such an important issue to so many Californians. And for those interested in learning more about how they can help or just learn more about the issue in general, I would definitely recommend going to the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Whale Safe Fisheries page. This is where a lot of their decision-making documents are updated. They'll release information about whale concentration so you know where whales are, and the latest information on entanglements that are happening. So I think that webpage is a great resource just to better understand the landscape and better understand how the state is currently managing the commercial and recreational Dungeness crab fisheries. I would also encourage people to start talking to their local seafood markets and fishers about whale-safe crab. There's already a few local seafood markets in California that are selling whale-safe crab. So talking with your local seafood supplier is a great way to increase awareness of the entanglement problem and hopefully encourage more people to adopt pop-up fishing gear.
In 2020, the California Department of Fish and Wildlife launched its Risk Assessment and Mitigation Program, or RAMP, developed in collaboration with the California Dungeness Crab Fishing Gear Working Group. The program monitors entanglement risks for humpback whales, blue whales, and leatherback sea turtles. RAMP uses the best available science, relying on confirmed entanglements and real-time marine life data from aerial surveys, vessel tracking, and satellite telemetry. The recent entanglement of Eureka triggered the latest full season closure for our region. To learn more, visit wildlife.ca.gov. In state news, activists for homeless say Bay Area cities veering right with legislation in San Jose, San Francisco, and Berkeley. KPFA's Kennedy Cuello reports.
Homeless people are under attack in the Bay Area. A proposal by San Jose Mayor Matt Mahone adds a responsibility to shelter provision to the city's encampment code of conduct. The proposal, which passed Tuesday in the San Jose City Council, creates a new police task force and allows residents that refuse three offers for housing to be arrested. This is despite calls from advocates of homeless people calling the provision cruel, with Mahone admitting that this would likely target those with an addiction or mental illness. The move is among the stricter anti-encampment bans by elected officials since the 2023 Supreme Court ruling that made it easier to ban homeless people from camping on public property. Community members Eugene Torres and Isela Reyes spoke against the proposal.
Instead of creating a police unit that will be intentionally causing more harm to our most vulnerable, what are their training requirements for interacting with unhoused individuals, including people in crisis?
What happens if the shelters, behavioral health beds, or the Mission Street recovery stations are full? Do we default to handcuffs when care isn't available? Our unhoused neighbors are human beings, people who are already carrying so much fear, loss, and instability. Criminalizing them for struggling only makes it harder to reach them without housing and healing.
Vice Mayor Pam Foley spoke in favor of the proposal, her opinion echoing that of the other supporters.
I support the mayor's proposed revisions to the city's encampment code of conduct. We cannot expect to adequately treat mental illness, addiction, or unemployment effectively if someone is living outdoors.
In San Francisco, Mayor Daniel Lurie introduced legislation Tuesday that would enact parking limits targeting homeless people living in vehicles. It's billed as part of Lurie's Breaking the Cycle plan. A statement from his office says he proposed $13 million over 2 years for rapid rehousing subsidies, a vehicle buyback program, and outreach and enforcement resources. His proposal also ensures those seeking assistance in the short term are not displaced.
We're putting in place a citywide parking limit of 2 hours for oversized vehicles. We're expanding outreach and prioritizing housing and services. not just enforcement.
Advocates in Berkeley are holding a rally Wednesday evening outside of the office of the Director of Police Accountability ahead of the Police Accountability Board meeting. This rally is in response to what advocates call the militarization of encampment sweeps, citing specifically a sweep of an encampment on June 4th. Andrea Pritchett, a founding member of Berkeley Cop Watch, urges residents to attend police accountability meetings and to call on the city council to put pressure on the police department to comply with the board. She called the militarization of police and the trend of criminalizing homelessness fascism, saying oppression against all marginalized communities are interconnected.
Fascism is the erasure, the ability of the state to erase certain peoples. So whether you're talking about immigrants and people getting kidnapped on the street, whether you're talking about the people of Gaza, you know, being erased, or you're talking about the poor people in our very own city, it's sort of this idea that that's somehow okay, that we somehow don't have to respect the due process rights of poor people, that we don't have to respect the constitutional protections that are meant to protect everybody.
Pritchett says the time is now to fight and force accountability on the police department. She recalls the death of Kayla Moore 12 years ago at the hands of Berkeley police.
As I watched the young man be tackled by police and piled on and swarmed by BPO while he was calling, "I can't breathe." He was calling, "You're breaking my rib." And as I looked at those, and I realized that 12 years has gone by and nothing has changed. Nothing has changed with this police department. They're overpaid and under-scrutinized. These are dangerous times, and we cannot allow our police department to continue to act with impunity.
For KPFA News, I'm Kennedy Cuello.
Ray Hamill brings us details of all of this week's big local sports stories, coming right up.
The 2025 Big Five and Little Four All-Conference teams and MVPs in baseball and softball have been announced. Hello and welcome to this week's KMUD News Sports Report. I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com. We'll have more on the All-Conference teams in just a moment as we take a look at all of this week's big local sports stories, including news of a new head coach at Cal Poly Humboldt, why it was an exciting week for the Humboldt Crabs at the Arcata Ballpark, some American Legion summer baseball news, where one HDNL standout is taking her talents after graduation, some local motorsports news, and how the North Coast charter schools are building momentum on the sports fields. But first up, the all-conference teams and MVPs in HDNL baseball and softball have been announced. In baseball, St. Bernard's junior Luke Brunton has been named MVP of the Little Four after playing a crucial role on the way to this year's championship. Brunton was instrumental for the Crusaders on the mound, where he won 7 games and had 3 saves, as well as on defense and at the plate. He edged out teammates Michael Manzi and Tyler Maples for the award and was one of 5 St. Bernard's players named to the All-Conference team. Manzi and Maples were also included on the All-Conference team, along with teammates Tyler Heinrichs and Matteo Ryman. Ferndale's Prescott Langer, Parker Pryor, and Tanner Pigeon each also were included on the All-Conference team, along with Hoopa's Brandon Romero and Lyle McKinnon, and South Fork's John Stafslian. In the Big Five, meanwhile, Del Norte senior Preston Daniels was named MVP after leading the Warriors to a first conference championship in 11 years. Daniels finished the season with an 8-3 record on the mound. His teammates Aiden Rice, Saxon Taylor, Anthony Cardenas, and Landon Williams were also named to the All-Conference team, along with McKinleyville's Colby Stope, Bryce Sargent, and Jackson Kelly, Eureka's Robert Williams and Cole Zeller, Arcata's Tanner Keyes, and Fortuna's Marcus Ludd. In softball, South Fork's Mackenzie Coleman has been named MVP of the Little Four after helping to lead the Cubs to their first conference championship in 35 years. Coleman's teammates Haley Shepard, Molly Perkins, and Layla Coleman were also named to the All-Conference team, along with Hoopa's Angela Hearn, Kalia Mitchell, and Montea Colgrove, St. Bernard's McKinley Kinsey Limley and Logan Talman, and Ferndale's Olivia Gossie and Madison Gossie. In the Big Five, Del Norte senior pitcher Shane Nolan was named MVP and was included on the All-Conference team, along with teammates Tacinte Steinruck, Chloe Smith, Carly Harper, and Bliss Blackburn. Also included were Fortuna's Mariah Bravo, Faith Helms, and Isabel Sanchez, McKinleyville's Bailey Box and McKenna Sargent, Arcata's Nalia Meyer, and Eureka's Macy Sakur. Elsewhere in local sports this week, there was some big news out of Cal Poly Humboldt with a new head coach named for the Lumberjacks men's basketball team. Less than 3 weeks after Chris Tift announced he was leaving the team to take over as head coach of conference rival Cal State San Bernardino, the Jacks have hired his replacement with the news that former Lumberjack DJ Broom will take over as head coach of the team. Broom played for Humboldt from 2008 to 2012, and he's also a former head coach of the College of the Redwoods women's team. Broom began his collegiate coaching career at his alma mater, serving as an assistant coach with the Jacks during the 2013-14 season. More recently, he was an assistant coach with the Division I Montana Grizzlies, helping lead them to this year's NCAA tournament. In local baseball news, it's been an exciting week for the Humboldt Crabs at the Arcata Ballpark. On Wednesday night, the Crabs improved to 9-0 on the season with a thrilling 6-5 walk-off win over the Stockton Pearls. It was the team's second walk-off victory in four games, having also defeated the Fresno A's 5-4 in 10 innings on Saturday night. The Crabs also got the better of the Pearls 8-0 on Tuesday and also beat the A's 14-0 on Friday and 8-2 on Sunday. The Crabs will try to keep an impressive start to the season going when they host the AE Express in a three-game series this weekend, with the action getting underway on Friday night. The two teams will also play on Saturday night at 6:30 and on Sunday afternoon at 12:30. Next week, the Crabs will open the Pacific Empire League with six road games, playing three games each at the Healdsburg Prune Packers and at the Lincoln Potters. In local American Legion baseball news, it was a good start to the new season for the Northern Humboldt Giants last weekend. Having just nine players available for a two-day road trip at Sutter didn't slow down the Giants, who won all four of their games on Saturday and Sunday. The Giants opened with an 8-0 win over the Chico Suns, and followed that with a 14-3 win over the Tehama Bulls, a 6-1 win over Roseville, and a 3-1 win over the Orland Outlaws. Another local summer team, the Wild Cactus, also had a good week. The 17U team, which is made up of mostly St. Bernard's players, defeated the Southern Humboldt 76ers 14-1 for their first win of the summer on Tuesday. Switching gears, in local track and field news, Eureka senior Isabella Clausen announced that she will continue her career in the sport at the college level after committing to Cal Poly Humboldt. The HDNL champion in the girls' shot put is the latest local thrower to take her talents to Cal Poly Humboldt, joining McKinleyville's Derek Ray and Kalissa Claros and Eureka's Joseph Gonzalez. The Jacks track and field team, which is coached by former Arcata Tiger Sarah Ingram, has a large local presence and has featured seven former HDNL athletes this past spring. In local motor sports news, the Redwood Acres Raceway will host its second race night of the season this Saturday night, with a packed night of action featuring the Craig Perrone Memorial Race for the Upstate Modified Series. The Upstate Bomber Series, the Legends, and the Mini Stocks will also be in action, and the racing gets underway at 5 p.m. And rounding out a busy week in local sports, it was a record-setting year for the Coast League. The local league for North Coast charter schools competed in five sports this school year, which was the most ever, including basketball, cross-country, volleyball, indoor soccer, and track and field. Next year, the local league is planning on adding disc golf as well. And that's this week's KMUD News Sports Report. Until next time, I'm Ray Hamill with HumboldtSports.com.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineers, Dennis Marr and Michael McCaskill. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Kennedy Cuello, and Ray Hamill. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Jordan Pangelinan.